Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Our thanks to Adams Road Band for that musical introduction. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We continue our look at a Gospel Topics essay titled Book of Mormon Translation. This was posted on an official Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints website, LDS.org, on December 30th, 2013. Today, we are continuing our look at the translation process of the Book of Mormon according to this essay, and it mentions how Joseph Smith, after he was not allowed to translate for a short period of time as a punishment for giving Martin Harris 116 pages of the manuscript and that were ultimately lost, no one really knows where they went. Some assume that maybe Martin Harris's wife, Lucy, had something to do with their disappearance. That could very well be. But Joseph Smith is not allowed to translate for a period of time. In 1829, he's allowed to translate again, according to the essay. And it says that almost all of the present Book of Mormon text was translated during a three-month period between April and June of that year. And that his scribe during those months was Oliver Cowdery, a schoolteacher from Vermont who learned about the Book of Mormon while boarding with Joseph's parents in Palmyra. Now, you have to understand, Oliver Cowdery is Lucy Max Smith, Joseph Smith's mother's third cousin. So there is a relationship there. Now, they didn't live near each other geographically, but Oliver Cowdery was Lucy's third cousin. So there is a familial relationship there. It talks about how the manuscript was dictated to Oliver Cowdery in the next paragraph.
It says, "The manuscript that Joseph Smith dictated to Oliver Cowdery and others is known today as the original manuscript, about 28% of which still survives. This manuscript corroborates Joseph Smith's statements that the manuscript was written within a short time frame and that it was dictated from another language. For example, it includes errors that suggest the scribe heard words incorrectly rather than misread words copied from another manuscript."
Can I stop you there? Because there's a footnote to that in this essay. It is footnote number 9, and I think we should read that. It says, "For example, when Joseph translated the text that is now in 1 Nephi 13:29, the scribe wrote," and then in quotation marks, it has an ampersand for "and," the word "and," "in one place where he should have written," quote, "an," A-N. At 1 Nephi 17:48, the scribe wrote "weed," W-E-E-D, where he should have written "read," R-E-E-D. The question I've always wondered about is, if we are to believe the way David Whitmer and Martin Harris explained the translation process, Joseph Smith would read off the stone to the scribe would read it back, and when it was correct, and only when it was correct, it would go on to the next set of characters. So, okay, if you're going to give me the impression that the scribe incorrectly heard Joseph Smith, are we also to assume that Joseph Smith must have incorrectly heard the scribe? Because the scribe's writing down the incorrect word, as this paragraph states. He's obviously reading back the incorrect word to Joseph Smith, but yet it goes on to the next set of characters. I don't understand how these mistakes could even be made in the first place if that's how the translation process went on.
Well, and it was a divine process. According to B.H. Roberts, who was a 70 and church historian, he said this. He said, "By aid of the seer stone, sentences would appear and were read by the prophet and written by Martin, and when finished, he would say, 'written.' And if correctly written, that sentence would disappear and another would appear in its place. But if not written correctly, it remained until corrected, so that the translation was just as it was engraven on the plates, precisely in the language then used.
So there shouldn't be any mistakes then.
Yeah, and Roberts goes on and cites David Whitmer, who was a Book of Mormon witness. And this is what he was more specific on the topic, he writes. After describing the means the prophet employed to exclude the light from the seer stone, he says, quote, "In the darkness a spiritual light would shine, a piece of something resembling parchment would appear, and on that appeared the writing. One character at a time would appear, and under it was the interpretation in English. Brother Joseph would read off the English to Oliver Cowdery, who was his principal scribe, and when it was written down and repeated to Brother Joseph to see if it was correct, then it would disappear, and another character with the interpretation would appear. Thus the Book of Mormon was translated by the gift and power of God, and not by the power of man." Bill, those mistakes that are being made are done by the power of man, not by the power of God. According to B.H. Roberts' citations here, we can see that this was supposed to be a divine process. There's no mix-ups here.
I think a lot of Latter-day Saints, too, when they hear that phrase translated by the gift and power of God, they're not looking so much at the mechanics of how it happened, but the fact that it did happen, that this is supposed to be an accurate English rendition of what was originally written in Reformed Egyptian. Now, again, how do we know this? Because Reformed Egyptian is an unknown language. And really, if only 28% of the original manuscript even survives, how do we really know there are mistakes unless you have something that's correct to compare it to?
Shouldn't that be disconcerting to the Latter-day Saint? If you only have 28% of the original and there are mistakes in that, who knows with the other 72%, how many other mistakes that are there?
Well, I think it raises a lot of questions. It goes on in that same paragraph. It says, in addition, some grammatical constructions that are more characteristic of Near Eastern languages than English appear in the original manuscript, suggesting that the base language of the translation was not English. And one of the arguments that you hear a lot of Mormon apologists raise is, well, there's chiasmus in the Book of Mormon. And I'm not going to take a lot of time to go into what all that is, but it's considered to be a writing style that would be Near Eastern. But the problem with that argument is we also find chiasmus in the Doctrine and Covenants. Now, that wouldn't be an ancient language. So why is it there? Obviously, Smith, I don't think he really knew what that was by name, but certainly if he talked that way, or maybe he was even just trying to use a biblical style because there is chiasmus in the Bible, he was merely imitating it. That seems to make sense to me. It may not to a faithful Latter-day Saint, but I don't think it's as strong an argument as many Latter-day Saints might think. Then in the next paragraph,
it says, unlike most dictated drafts, the original manuscript was considered by Joseph Smith to be, in substance, a final product. To assist in the publication of the book, Oliver Cowdery made a handwritten copy of the original manuscript. This copy is known today as the printer's manuscript. Because Joseph Smith did not call for punctuation, such as periods, commas, or question marks as he dictated, such marks are not in the original manuscript. The typesetter later inserted punctuation marks when he prepared the text for the printer. With the exceptions of punctuation, formatting, other elements of typesetting, and minor adjustments required to correct copying and scribal errors, the dictation copy became the text of the first printed edition of the book.
Isn't that odd that one of the arguments that we have heard Mormons raise when it comes to the Bible is we don't have any autographs? And they tend to give this impression that there must have been mistakes made in the translation process, according to Article 8, which we know really what they mean is it was transmitted incorrectly over the years. And this is what puts that huge question mark about the Bible in the mind of the Latter-day Saint.
But, so why doesn't the Book of Mormon come with a similar Article 8? The Book of Mormon is true only as far as it is translated or transmitted correctly.
I think that would be fair, since they're trying to cast some type of doubt on the Bible's accuracy. Why don't they do the same with the Book of Mormon? If you only have 28% of the original manuscript that we know was supposed to be word for word, who knows how many scribal errors there could have been in the percentage above and beyond the 28%.
We have 28% of the English translation that was taken off of there, but we have 0% of the original plates. So when it comes to autographs in the Hebrew and the Greek, we have 0% as well from the original hands of the apostles and the prophets who wrote that. But the Mormon has the same problem because he has 0% of the original Reformed Egyptian plates. That's a problem.
There's no way to really examine it, at least with our Bible scholars, as they can go back to the original languages of the Greek and the Hebrew, and they can examine to see if the translations are good or not. And surprisingly, even Mormon scholars who are familiar with the translation of our Bibles will say that they are translated very well. And even those that are knowledgeable about how our Bible came about will argue, alongside with many of our biblical scholars, that the transmission of the text is high enough in percentage, in the high 90 percentile, high 98-99%, which tends to tell us that it is a trustworthy document. So when most Mormons come to us saying that they can't believe the Bible, that it's been corrupted over the years, that's not what even Mormon scholars will say.
We certainly have a much better situation than Latter-day Saint when it comes to Scripture, because we do have, as I mentioned before, we do have manuscripts going back, some believe, as early as the first century of the New Testament manuscripts. We have over 5,000 Greek, 24,000 total. We have something to compare it with, but the Mormon has nothing to compare it with, except he has a little more than a quarter of the translation. That's not good enough for me.
And of course, the Dead Sea Scrolls certainly were not a help to the Mormon claim that our Bible's been corrupted. The Isaiah scroll, for instance, when we look at the Isaiah scroll, which was found in Cave 1, it certainly does read very similar to what we have today. So where is all this corruption that supposedly took place later on? We don't see that.
And that's a good point. As far as the book of Isaiah, the earliest copy we had before then was the Masoretic text from the 10th century AD, a 1,000-year gap. And yet when the scholars take a look at this, the entire scroll, what a book to have out of all of them. And to be able to show the prophecies, which this was dated probably around 100 BC, before the time of Christ, and all those prophecies and everything else were accurate as it was in the 10th century AD.
And obviously, as we said, could not have been tampered with like the Mormon Church tries to imply. Tomorrow, we're going to look at the section in this Gospel Topics essay titled Translation Instruments. We've already talked a little bit about that in regards to the seer stone, but we're going to discuss it a little bit more in detail in tomorrow's broadcast.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wondered where you can go in downtown Salt Lake City to browse the largest inventory of Christian books on the Mormon religion? Well, the answer is the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, located at 1358 South and West Temple, just across the street from the Smith Ballpark. Whether you're looking for a basic introduction or a more scholarly work, Sandra Tanner and her staff will assist you in finding the appropriate resources so you can better understand the LDS religion. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore also carries dozens of books that Sandra and her husband Gerald have written over the past 5 decades. This includes their comprehensive work, Mormonism, Shadow or Reality. So, once again, if you have questions about the LDS faith, there is always somebody behind the desk who would be more than happy to assist you. The Utah Lighthouse Bookstore is open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and on Saturdays from 1 to 5. Remember, when in Salt Lake City, be sure to come check out the Utah Lighthouse Bookstore, located right there at 1358 South and West Temple.